This is Yale's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. We've been watching the escalating fighting in Israel, and to give us his perspective, here's retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Jeff, it strikes me that with Israel's basically demolition of that 13-story building in Gaza, we're talking about real warfare. My understanding was that hitting each other's high-rises was sort of one of those bright lines that before now we didn't want to cross.
There's no doubt about it, Dave. We're seeing escalation of violence in Israel between Israel and Gaza that we have not seen since the war in 2014 that went on for 50 days. And dropping those high-rises obviously has caused enormous casualties in Gaza. Estimates are now that over 80 people have been killed in Gaza, 16 of which have reported to have been children, as this violence expands. But, you know, the violence is expanding in another way that I find particularly worrisome, and that is between Arabs and Israelis living within Israel. We have reports of many cities of citizens, Arabs, about 20% of the population of Israel, and Israelis now mob violence in the streets in places like Lod and Acre, people being beaten, restaurants being set on fire. And so this is a new level of violence within Israel, as well as Israel confronting Gaza with airstrikes countered by Gaza and Hamas firing rockets against Israel.
Now, we have allies in the area, including Qatar, which I understand has quite a bit of influence on the West Bank. So how would they help end this?
Well, Egypt, Qatar, and other Arab states will be the ones who will be in contact with Hamas, and usually are the ones that negotiate behind the scenes some sort of a ceasefire. And now their ability to do that right now, as both sides keep exchanging strikes, is problematical. And also the question right now as well, the two leaders in this particular confrontation, Bibi Netanyahu in Israel and Hamas in Gaza, are actually the winners. Now, Netanyahu is trying to fortify his position after once again an election in which he was not able to get a majority and then reseat himself as prime minister. Obviously, is now seen as a galvanizing force in Israel defending the country, which may help him politically and also prevent him from perhaps being prosecuted on corruption charges. In Gaza, Hamas has embellished his position as the defender of Jerusalem, the defender of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, where all this began, which is the third holiest place in Islam, and that's the PLA, the Palestinian Authority, in the West Bank, as being seen by Palestinians, at least, as the true voice of the Palestinian people.
So they're killing people as an election strategy?
I'm not saying they're killing people as election strategy. I'm just saying the second order effect is it's positive for in some ways for Netanyahu. It's positive for Hamas. And the fact that occurs, I think, will actually make the whole situation more complicated in trying to find some resolution, particularly as this violence escalates. Obviously, violence, once it starts, escalates and becomes difficult to control. And so then these other factors just make that problem, which is already very, very difficult, even a little bit harder.
Wasn't there some sort of a deal during the Trump administration with Saudi Arabia to end all this or come to some sort of peaceful compromise? What happened to that?
Well, of course, the Trump administration, through its lot with Israel, recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, moved the embassy to Jerusalem, and then brokered this deal between Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, the so-called Abraham Accord, to normalize relationships with Israel, basically bypassing the Palestinians. And this now has put people like the Emiratis in a difficult spot because they told their population that by normalizing relations with Israel, this would give them more leverage with the Israelis in trying to assert certain rights for Palestinians. Obviously, that seems to be blowing up right now in the streets of Gaza. The belief was this would progress over time then to seeing more and more Arab states normalize relations with Israel. And we have seen Morocco, and we have seen Sudan do so. But obviously now with this violence going on, that has kind of come to a halt. But obviously always the possibility of indirect support. And this is where the Iranians actually play a role because Hamas is a Shiite-based organization, and so is Hezbollah, which has been very quiet on the northern border of Israel in southern Lebanon. And so weapons have continually been provided, particularly from Iran and other parts of the Middle East, for Hamas and Hezbollah. So they would provide assistance there. An overt intervention is unlikely because I think what the Arab leaders have found over time is less and less sympathy in their populations for Palestinians. There remains some, but after this has ground on for years and years and years, that sympathy has diminished to a degree. What's more worrisome to me is this conflict might spread if Hezbollah were to get involved firing rockets from the north, which they have not done so far, and also because of the large Palestinian population in Jordan, if we saw instability starting to break out in Jordan, then this becomes very, very, very serious.
If that Iron Dome system were to fail and the Palestinian side takes down like a big high-rise in Tel Aviv, what happens?
Well, then you'll see a quid pro quo by the Israelis and more massive attacks by aircraft, artillery fire, et cetera, against Hamas, and the whole situation just ratchets up. We've seen literally hundreds of rockets fired by Hamas into Israel from Gaza. Iron Dome seems to be working and taking out about 90% of them, but you're quite right. As this escalation continues, the possibility of them getting lucky and hitting a major population center, either in Jerusalem or in Tel Aviv or another major Israeli city, cannot be, you know, discounted.
CBS military analyst and retired Army Colonel Jeff McCausland. Jeff, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Takes us to 621, traffic in a moment, and you are not imagining it. Even local prices are soaring as the nation deals with a bout of inflation. With a story, here's Cairo Radio's Heather Bosch.
Prices in the greater Seattle area rose 3.4% in the past 12 months. That's actually better than the jump nationwide.
Nationwide prices rose 4.2% over the last year, which was the largest over-the-year percent change since 2008.
U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics economist Matthew Insko. What's driving the increase?
Used cars and trucks. That went up 12% over the last 2 months and a little over 22% over the last year. And, of course, gasoline prices, which have been in the news, we've seen an increase in that as well, which tend to be pretty volatile. They've increased over 15% over the last 2 months and 35% over the last year.
Which can affect even more.
A lot of these things can be tied together. For example, the food that goes to the grocery store needs to be delivered. Transportation costs are tied to gasoline prices.
MarketWatch.com says this may be tied to trading bottlenecks created globally by the pandemic and increasing demand as economies reopen. The Federal Reserve indicates the increase is temporary and should subside next year, but Insko urges caution in this modern, uncharted post-pandemic world.
During this pandemic period, a lot of different things have been happening, so whether it will be a long-term trend or not remains to be seen.
Heather Bosch, Cairo Radio News.
And there are some concerns from even Democratic economists. Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, has urged the White House to change course after the report of higher-than-expected inflation last month. He said policymakers at the Fed and in the White House need to recognize that the risk of a Vietnam inflation scenario is now greater than the deflation risks on which they were focusing originally. He told CNN that whatever was the case a few months ago, it ought to be clear now that it is overheating and not excess slack in the economy. That's the dominant economic risk facing the U.S. over the next year or two.